Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Women of Golf Show. I'm Ted Odorico, and right alongside here, as always, is LPGA professional and Legends Tour player Cindy Miller, and we are the hosts of the Women of Golf Show. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning, Ted. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. As I said to you briefly off air, I'm battening down the hatches today. They're calling for some severe rain for the next few days here in North Florida, right down to Tampa, actually. And a little bit beyond, I think, but they're calling for quite some severe weather, so we'll see what happens. But I'm getting my paddle and my swim fins out, and I'm getting ready in case I have to make a dash for it. But other than that, I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing great. The weather in Buffalo was unbelievable.
I know. I should be up there right now. But thank you, everybody, for joining in this morning. Just to remind you, of course, we are live every Tuesday morning, unless otherwise stated, on blogtalkradio.com. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf. That will take you there, or just type in at blogtalkradio.com, Women of Golf, in the search key up top, and that will take you to the main page. And, of course, as I said, we're live from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the network. You can also get us at iTunes as well. Go to iTunes.com, and in the podcast section, type, again, Women of Golf, and that will take you there as well, and you can listen to us live. We'd love to have you live, and if not, you can go when it's convenient for you and listen to the recorded version at any time. But for those of you joining us live this morning, thank you very much. As always, we are always very grateful for that. If you want to call in and speak to us or any of the guests during the live broadcast, you can do so by calling area code 347-945-5855. And if you're interested in coming on the show, if you're in the golf industry, whether you're a club professional, teach professional, or somebody that maybe an entrepreneur that in the golf industry that you feel you have something to share with our audience, we would love to hear from you. You can reach out to Cindy at cindy@cindymillergolf.com, or you can also reach out to me at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. Got a great show for you this morning. We're going to start off a little bit with what I like to call a good guide to playing better golf, and Cindy and I are going to discuss some of the key components to playing better golf, or especially for many of you amateurs out there. And then a little bit later on the broadcast, we're going to be joined by LPGA Class A professional, teaching a club professional, Peggy Gustafson. She's up in the Anchorage, Alaska area. We're going to talk a little bit about Alaska golf. I'm sure some of you probably weren't aware that you can actually play golf up in Alaska, but there's some great courses up there, Anchorage being one of them. We're going to talk about that when she comes on here in a little bit. But Cindy, let me ask you, lots of golf left in the season, but the majors are pretty much wrapped up, particularly for the men. And lots of, again, interesting winners this year in that. Anything that stuck out this year that maybe you'd like to throw out there? Anything that stuck out in your mind that you either saw or heard through the networks?
The thing that I am most grateful to witness was Dustin Johnson's ability to stay focused on the task at hand at the U.S. Open on the last round after they told him they were going to inspect what he did on that, I guess it was the 12th hole,
yeah,
and whether or not he was going to get a penalty. I will never forget that. And Jordan Spieth's demise, because he was thinking thoughts in the middle of his backswing that he shouldn't be thinking, and then how you can make a quadruple on a par three and make a birdie on the next. It's just how fast can you recover. So those two things really stick out in my mind. I'm so I was just so proud of Dustin Johnson to be able to stay focused on the task at hand.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, Cindy, and I agree with you. There are some great, great examples. I think a lot of people really don't understand you know, what these professionals go through out in the golf course. Cindy, of course, as most of the listeners know that have tuned in, of course, Cindy has played professionally. She's not just a great teacher and coach, but she's also played on the LPGA Tour as well as the now, of course, the Legends Tour as well. So, Cindy, you've lived through a lot of these experiences. You've experienced what many of the pros have experienced out there in the golf course. So you understand their mindset. And, you know, the point you talk about, Justin, we'll start with him for an example. You know, most amateur golfers, given that same type of scenario, probably would have had their game derailed. Would you agree with that from that point?
Well,
they probably would have had
even Rory and Jordan Spieth said they would have had their game derailed. I mean, that was such a big deal that I don't know that most people understand it. So, to me, that's why it was such a big deal, because Rory, Jordan, everybody was like, oh, my God, that's ridiculous. Paul Azinger was tweeting about it. I can't believe the USGA just did that. And again, so it was monumental what he did.
Yeah.
Because I would have gone ballistic. You know, I mean, if the number one player in the world said that he would have wanted to kill somebody, would not have continued without, you know, without having it settled,
right,
then it's okay for the rest of us to want to kill somebody. You know, it was just such a big deal. So
yeah,
golfers would have screwed it up big time.
Yeah, and it just really goes to his composure. I mean, he kept himself composed. You know, he didn't get, you know, didn't go over the top. He knew that he had some golf left to play, and he knew he had to get the job done in order to win. And ultimately, of course, he did. But yeah, that could have definitely. I mean, for far less than that, we've seen players over the years that have, you know, sort of collapsed under the pressure of a situation. And for him to be able to keep himself composed, to be able to do that. And certainly what Jordan did as well is certainly, you know, he wasn't a slouch in his circumstances. Of course, you know, having a triple and then turning around and birding the very next hole, again, it says a lot to the caliber of these players. I mean, their mental side, you know, everybody focuses on, you know, Cindy, we probably heard this to death, but everybody focuses on the physical part of the game. And yes, you know, you've got to be able to, you know, in some way master many areas of the physical game, but even more so and more important, you've got to be able to do your best to master the mental side of the game, because it can really wreak havoc. You know, you can recover from a bad shot physically, but sometimes mentally that's not always that easy. And, you know, that was a good example as well with Jordan, to be able to bounce back and get a birdie on the very next hole.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing, a guide to getting better at golf. We should discuss the fact that if you really want to play at the highest level of competition, you really need to have a physical game, because your physical game is going to be tested when you go play. We've been doing an awful lot of playing lessons this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when we get there, I ask the students, you know, what is it that you want to work on today? Well, I'm having trouble hitting my driver. And then, well, that's not why we're doing a playing lesson. We're doing a playing lesson to teach you where to hit your driver. So if you can't hit your driver, how can you hit your driver where I want you to hit it? So it's understanding that there's a huge learning curve in skill acquisition, and that's what I would call, you know, if you have trouble taking a full swing, maybe you need to do a half swing, which I call a fairway finder. You know, let's just take half swings and bunt it down the middle of the fairway and see what happens. If you do that, you can score. But people don't want to do that. They want to take full swings and kill it and hit it out of bounds and in the water. So you have to stop and say, you know, what's my goal here? What am I looking for? What do I want to accomplish? And then go from there. Because you have to be able to hit the ball to be able to play the game.
Sure, exactly. And you're 100% right. And I think the first thing that you have to do, and Cindy, you've talked about this many, many times. In fact, you literally preach this, is you have to sort of have an assessment done. You have to understand first off the whys. Why are you playing golf? Why are you there? And you have to really understand it, because that dictates the path that you're going to take from that point forward. If you don't understand, you know, if you want to play competitive golf, or if you just want to go out there and have fun, that's important to know right from the get-go, because that dictates the level of commitment. If you're somebody that wants to play at a high level, a very high competitive level, You can't just sort of saunter out whenever you feel like it out into the golf course or out to the practice tee. You've got to make an honest commitment. And I think that sort of stems what I would consider point number one is, first off, you need to understand why you're there. And then you have to understand what level of commitment you're prepared to do. And that's something that really, and we'll talk about that in a few moments, but what you need to do with a professional. You can't just sort of go out there willy-nilly and make up your mind. You need to understand and work that. So as I put together some of these points, Cindy, again, they're not necessarily in any particular order, but I thought they were worth discussing. And this is obviously geared primarily for the amateur golfers out there because they are the ones that struggle the most. But I sort of put together what I call this a good guide to playing better golf. And one of the things that people have to ask themselves once they've made the assessment, once they understand why they're there, do you warm up? And it's not just a matter of hitting shots and things like that, but do you warm up when you go to the golf course? Do you stretch? Do you, you know, what some of the things that you do? And Cindy, I'd like to use you as an example because you've played at a competitive level, so you understand that. But when you go to the golf course, what's some of the first things that you do in order to prepare for whatever you're doing, whether it's practice or a playing session?
Well, definitely I stretch because I'm tight. I'm not very flexible. So I definitely stretch. And you know what I've been doing? I hate to say this, but reality is setting in, and I'm getting this flabby skin on my arms. I'm like, oh, my God, what's happened to me in the last 2 years? I'm withering away. And so I've been squeezing one of those balls to keep my forearms and my wrists, and I've got a 3-pound weight in the car because I got a commute to work, and I do that with my arms just to stay, you know, while I'm driving, I just do the 3-pound weight. It's not like it's going to hurt me or anything. And I definitely stretch. But the other thing I do is I practice mentally when I'm not hitting balls. So I'm going Sunday. I have to leave to go play in the Wendy's Charity Classics in Jackson, Michigan, where we raise money for adoption on the Legends Tour. And it's a pro-am, but it's the beginning of a big week next week. Next week is the Legends Tour Open Championship at French Lick, Indiana. And gratefully, I got in the event. I was second alternate, and a couple people withdrew, so thank you so much. I get to play. That's the good news. The bad news is this golf course, the last time I walked it was 22,000 steps. It's uphill, downhill, hardest golf course I've ever played in my life against the best players over 45 in the world. So, and I've been giving 70 golf lessons a week. Oh, great. So you're ready to play? No, not really. You know, so what do you do when you're not ready? I went out Sunday and I played two balls the whole time. And I just focused on what I was doing. I was all by myself, peaceful. It was so nice. And so I was like, okay, what are we doing? What is your plan? What are you thinking when you're standing over the ball? What are you feeling? What are you visualizing? You have to pay attention to what your intention is. And if you don't, you have no right to get mad at yourself.
Right. Exactly. Well said. And I like the fact that you're doing something on the way to the golf course. Obviously, you're being mindful that you're in traffic, so it's not like you're doing yoga positions in the car or something, but you are doing that. I mean, that would be something that I think you'd have to be careful of. But you are doing something. You're preparing yourself on the way to the golf course. And obviously, again, you're being mindful of those around you, traffic-wise, I'm referring to. But at the same time, you are preparing mentally before you even get to the golf course. And obviously, once you get there, you're going to, you know, maybe do some stretches and things like that. And most people might start off by doing a little bit of chipping. You know, one of the biggest mistakes I think a lot of people is they don't allow themselves enough time before they go to a round, you know, whether in a competitive round or just even a fun round. Is they sort of get their shoelaces barely tied, and they're having to scramble to get to the first tee, and if they're lucky, they might get a moment or two out in the range just to hit a few balls to see where it's going that particular day. But those that are a little smarter, that give themselves sufficient time, they're going to go there and they're going to work on key areas of the game. And I believe in, and as I'm sure you do, Cindy, that you need to practice the important stuff. If you're going to go there and work on things, and I don't mean mechanically, but you need to practice, you know, things like chipping and pitching and obviously putting, because that's where you're going to lose most of your strokes. You're not going to lose your strokes hitting your drive, off in the woods. You're certainly going to lose a stroke here and there, but the majority of your strokes are going to be in your short game, and that's what I believe you need to practice the most, especially when you're getting ready to play. Would you agree with that, do you think?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. Putting. Well, and you know what's funny? Again, you have to face the facts, your fears. And so the facts are I'm not going to hit it as good as I used to. The facts are I'm not going to hit it as long as I used to. So what are you going to do? How are you going to make pars on a golf course that's so hard and long that's not funny? You're going to have to get it up and down. So you're going to have to make a lot of 10-foot putts and in. So that's what you need to go practice, inside 10 feet, because you're going to hit some chips that aren't going to get that close. And hopefully you hit a couple of shots that are that close and you can make a couple of birdies. But it's going to be a scrambling round, and you have to face the facts and reality. And if you're not willing to do that, again, you have no right to get ticked off.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you're right. I think a lot of people, they're too, especially guys. I mean, I'll be honest, the guys are the biggest culprits. I think the ladies have a much, better approach to things. But I think a lot of the guys, they get out there and they think, well, if I can just hit the ball further off the tee, then I'll be fine. So they practice, with their driver all the time, and they're getting out there. And it's good to certainly practice, but they're spending too much time worrying about the long ball and not focusing on, within 100 yards, let's say, of the green. The other thing, too, is developing a solid pre-shot routine. That is, I think, key. Cindy, I'm sure that you would agree with that as well, that having a good pre-shot routine before you actually hit the shot and having something that's consistent, that is repeatable, is important as well. You see all of the good players on all of the tours, ladies and the men's tours, have a solid pre-shot routine. Again, would you agree with that as well?
Absolutely. Again, you have to prepare to hit the shot. A lot of times I'll just have my students, okay, walk around, walk back, let's plan the shot, where are we going? They just want to rake and hit, rake and hit, rake and hit, and then they get on the course and they can't aim. They have no idea where they're aiming, and they hit the ball, and they go, well, that's not where I wanted to go. And I said, well, you never even looked up to see where you were aimed. So
yeah.
They're not aware. Again, their only mission is hit ball, hit ball, hit ball. It's like, no. We got to walk back and we got to plan this now. How are you comfortable walking into it? Are you going to walk into it with one hand on, with two hands on? Are you going to look at the target when you set the face down? Are you going to look down at the ball when you put the foot, the face down? How are you going to set your feet? Will you be looking at the target or down at the ball? So all those things matter for you to get a comfortable pre-shot routine that you can stick with no matter what. So, yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, and it can be, unique. You don't have to necessarily do the same thing as Dustin Johnson does or Jordan Spieth or Cindy Miller or anybody out there that's played on the tour. You don't necessarily have to do it exactly the same way, but you have to have something that's consistent. And the reason why I want to make one final point and then I want to move on is if you ever look, for those of you listening today, if you look at the professionals, you will always see them do this. If they ever get in a situation where they momentarily lose their momentum, they will stop what they're doing and they will go back and repeat that process, that pre-shot routine. So you'll often see a player walking up maybe to a putt and they get over it. They're not comfortable. For whatever reason, they're not comfortable in that shot. So they'll take a step back. Many of them will go and place their club right back in the bag again, depending on the circumstance, and they'll actually go through their entire routine again. And people are saying, why are they doing all that? It's because they're regrouping and they're mentally preparing themselves for the shot at hand. And a lot of amateurs just sort of, as you said, they try to scramble around and they don't really have any sort of game plan or they don't prepare themselves. And that's why a pre-shot shot routine is also important. Another important thing, Cindy, I think, particularly for some of the weaker or less players that just are not as solid in their game, is to play away from a big number. And what I mean by that is a lot of amateurs try to play too aggressively for their abilities. You need to know what your abilities are. And Cindy, I want you to expand maybe a little bit on that as well. I mean, you've played in a lot of pro-ams. You've seen players going out there, maybe they're 180 yards from the green and they're, using a club that they're not going to reach there. Talk a little bit about that, playing away from big numbers, how they can do that.
Well, again, it's the reality of how good are you and what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses. And if you don't hit the ball far enough, you have to make sure that you play the hole to the best of your ability, meaning you don't want to try to fire at something and bury it in a bunker or hit it in the water. You got to play strategically. Most golfers don't break 100. So we could teach you how to shoot 90 if you can hit the ball 150 yards and you're playing from the right tee marker. And people say, well, I don't want to do that. Well, then shoot 1,000. I don't care. So you're not going to change until the pain gets bad enough and you're willing to look in the mirror and do something about it. If you're willing to look in the mirror and do something about it, then you can definitely play to your strengths and your ability. Hitting it on the green in 3 and 2-putting helps you make bogey. And if you bogey every hole, you shoot 90. And again, back to your comment about all these guys wanting to hit their driver. I got to hit my driver. I got to hit my driver straighter. Well, no, you really don't. Why don't you hit your 4 hybrid? Well, I can't do that. Well, then fine. Shoot 1,000. So until you have the time and are willing to invest the time and the money to work on your game to hit your driver straight, you're being an idiot. So, again, you only hit the driver 14 times in 18 holes.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody has, I don't think anybody's ever had 14 putts in 18 holes. So, So, what should we work on more? Well, it's more fun to hit your driver. I understand that. But if you really want to make your score go down, we need to go practice putting.
Right. And the way, the way I look at it is this. You know, what's more important to you? Is it more important to have fun hitting the driver, or is it more fun playing the game itself? Do you want to have more fun and enjoyment playing? And that doesn't mean that you just, throw the driver away and you never work on it. And that there's a time and an appropriate time, and we'll talk about that here in just a moment, to work on things like that. But you have to prioritize what you're going to do. And I'm just going to read a few more of the points here because we're moving pretty fast here on our time. So I want to make sure that we don't get overboard here. But, some other things that I always recommend is for those less skilled players, play with better players. Don't play with people that are worse than you. I always say go up the food chain, if you will. Play with players that are not just a little bit better, but, and again, you have to be mindful. Obviously, you might have to pick up your ball along the way. If you're playing in a fun round, but play with better players because you can learn a lot from them, watching them, how they handle themselves on the golf course, and you can learn some things. I don't necessarily mean emulate their swing, but you can certainly pick up some good things from them as well. Another one as well, Cindy, is commit to the shot and then do it. In other words, if you see the pros, once they make up their mind that's the shot they're going to hit, they commit to it and they just go out and do it. They don't sit there and, willy-nilly, well, I don't know if I should, and mull it over for the next 10 minutes. They get there, they commit to the shot, and they do it. They also focus on one shot at a time. They're not thinking 5 holes ahead. They're thinking in the moment. And, Cindy, I know that you've done that as well, focusing shot by shot, not getting too far ahead of yourself because that just makes it amplifies the anxiety that you're going to experience. Do you have a safety shot?
That's right.
Cindy?
Well, and again,
right?
I got to tell you, remember the girls, all the 3 or 4 of the Symetra Tour players that we've had on the show have said they play little 3-hole tournaments within their own mind, so they don't get too far ahead. So that, might be something that you do. Okay, I'm just going to do these 3 holes, and right now I've got to hit this shot right in front of me. So that might help you focus on the task at hand a little better.
Yeah, exactly. And also develop a safety shot. Cindy, I don't know if you have a sort of a go-to shot when you're under pressure in that. Maybe, Nicholas, obviously, the fade was his best shot, and he always knew he could count on that. And he had, shots, and I'm sure Tiger and many of the other players have a shot that they can go to. If they're not hitting their driver well, maybe they're Freddie Couples used to uses 3-wood off the tee. Sometimes he would use even a 5-wood. I've seen him occasionally do that if he just wasn't hitting his driver that well, depending on the circumstances. So developing a safety shot is also important. And, buying equipment that's suited to your game. There's no point going out and spending, thousands of dollars on the best equipment out there if you're playing once a month or twice, a year. You don't need it. But having said that, you do need to make sure that you're fitted properly. We're going to talk a little bit about that when Peggy comes on to join us, but in more detail. But, you know, buying equipment that's suited to your game and making sure that you're fitted properly, because that makes a difference as well. You know, you're not going to go out there and just buy something off the rack and expect to play well. Have a game plan and then stick to it, as Cindy, you talked about in the beginning there. Developing a game plan. Don't just go out there and say, well, I've got 18 holes to play and I'm just going to, you know, whatever happens, happens. Come with a game plan in mind, how you're going to attack each of the holes. Work that out ahead of time and sort of mull that over and get that in. That's part of the mental side. Cindy, do you develop maybe a couple swing thoughts? And if so, what are they when you're over the ball? Do you have a lot of things going through your mind, or you try to simplify and have maybe one or two thoughts when you're getting ready to execute shots?
I'm trying to simplify. Again, you would need to know whether you're audio, visual, or kinesthetic. Mm-hmm. And depending on what you are, I happen to be visual and auditory. So this is kind of a weirdo thing, but I pretend I'm spiked to a pole to mm-hmm. keep myself still. And then
right.
I visualize and I'm spiked to a pole. I don't even look at the ball. I don't know what I'm looking at when my face is pointing down. I don't even focus on the ball at all. And then I just, I think swing, hinge, kill. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And see, that's important as well, to have, you know, one or two simple swing thoughts or one or two simple thoughts when you get over the ball. Too many amateurs, Cindy, and I'm sure, you know, you've experienced this many, many times, and not only in the pro-ams, but with some of your students that you're working with. They just get so many things. They're worried about, you know, they've got to get home or they've got to pick something up at the store. You know, and they're not even focusing on what they're doing here. They're thinking about things outside of the element they're in. And they just get, you know, they just get too many things. And that, again, goes to not so much the physical game, but in the mental game. You've got to be able to clear your mind. You're there for a specific reason. You're there to play golf. You're there to take lessons, whatever the case happens to be. That's what you need to be focusing on, listening to the instructor, listening to the teacher, and then, you know, working on the things that the two of you have put together. And obviously, as you just pointed out, Cindy, visualizing the shot, you know, you've got to visualize the shot at hand. You know, get a mental picture. You know, is it where do you want the ball to go in the fairway? Or if you're approaching the green, where's the best target on that green that's going to give you the best opportunity to make your putts? And so there's a lot of factors that go into that. And then the last thing I wanted to point out, Cindy, of course, as we would both attest to, is take lessons. Golf is not an easy sport. Cindy's been playing for many years. I've been playing for many years. I still struggle from time to time with my game, as you do, Cindy, I know, from time to time. And, you know, our outside activities sometimes take away, you know, lessons and things like that from us being able to go out and work on our own games many times. So we struggle when we get out to the golf course as well. It's not uncommon, even for some of the best players, to struggle. So if they're going to struggle, if we're going to struggle, there's no reason that you're not going to struggle. But let's make the process a little easier. Go to somebody. You know, there's some great professionals all over the country that you can go to, both PGA and LPGA and others, that have been specifically trained in putting to some of these things together. And Cindy, you know, you're a great example of that. You work well with your students you know, the youngsters that we had on there a few months ago that work with you. It was very apparent that they're paying attention to what you're telling them. And that's extremely important. Let's just wrap it up here if we can, Cindy, but just talk about the importance of taking lessons.
Well, I think you need to find somebody that you relate to. I would investigate. Now, you know, with the internet and Google, you can search for who's in your area, or you might be willing to travel to go take lessons mm-hmm. from somebody. When I was younger, I went, you know, to I found Bob Toski and took lessons from him. Alan traveled from Pensacola, Florida to Ocean Reef to take lessons from Bob Toski. So find someone that you can relate to. Find someone that speaks your language. Find someone that you can get along with. But they're there to help you. And if they criticize you and tell you everything you're doing wrong, I would go find somebody else, because nobody's trying to miss it on purpose. Find somebody that will help you figure out your faults and fix yourself. That's what I would do. Somebody that you can relate to, and knows what they're doing that can really, truly care about your game and help you.
Yeah, it's a relationship. It's like anything. It's, you know, I equate, you know, working with a professional as building a relationship. It's, again, as you pointed out, you know, it's somebody that you trust, that you feel comfortable with, and feel confident that they're well-rounded in a variety of different things. The one thing I would say that, and again, you know, each, you know, individual, you know, each to their own, but one swing does not fit all. And, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all swing. So just be mindful of specific, you know, approaches where they're, you know, trying to put you into a box. That's something I try to guard against as well, and I explain to students, whether they come to me or they want to go somewhere else, is I tailor my lessons around the individual. I don't try to put them in a box with everybody else and say, well, John over here swings like this, so I'm going to try and make your swing look like John's, or Dustin Johnson hits the ball like this, and that's how I want you to do it. We're all different. We're all unique, and I think it's important that we treat everybody as such, and I think most of the professionals, Cindy, that we have had on the show over the last few years would agree with that. You know, in their conversations, we've heard them say that. You know, and I know you do as well as I do. So
one of the things I would say is be very careful. If you happen to be an accountant or an engineer and you're very analytical, be very careful. Sometimes you can be a little bit too analytical and too much of a perfectionist, and you might need a little more right brain instructor. And then on the other hand, if you're absolutely, you know, willy-nilly, it doesn't matter, I don't think much, you might need an instructor that's going to rein you in a little bit and get you to focus a little more. So make sure that you pick the right person, and Ted's right, it's all about relationships.
Right, exactly. Let me just very quickly, I'm just going to read them off very quickly, just a quick recap for those of you out there that are listening, just some of the things that we put together here in a good guide to playing better golf. Do a warm-up before you even get to the golf course, and when you get there, warm up again. Practice the important stuff. Very important to do that. Develop a solid pre-shot routine. Even a post-shot routine as well is always good to have. Play away from those big numbers. For some of you weaker players out there that that maybe don't haven't mastered some of the areas that you need to, be less aggressive. Don't play as aggressive as maybe your playing partner. He or she may have had multiple lessons, may have been playing for a great deal longer than you. So do that. Work on some of the most important shots in golf, being putting, chipping, and pitching. As Cindy pointed out, you're only hitting the driver 14 times in a round, so why do you want to spend the majority of your time doing that? Play with better players. Always good to, as I said, go up the food chain. Commit to the shot and then do it. Make your commitment. Decide what shot you need to hit and then just do it. Make that commitment. Regardless of what the result may be, that's a learning lesson for you as well. One shot at a time. Don't focus, you know, five holes down. Focus on the shot that you're dealing with at that particular time. Develop a safety shot. Have a go-to shot in times of high pressure or difficulty on the golf course. Develop that safety shot. Make sure that you buy equipment suited for your game. Get fitted by one of your local professionals. Make sure that you go to somebody that's experienced in club fitting and get them to set you up. Have a game plan and then stick to it. Develop a game plan, as Cindy always talks about, and then stick to it. Develop maybe a couple of swing thoughts. Decide what they're going to do, and that's something you can work with your instructor. Visualize the shots that you're going to make at the particular time. Again, don't think, you know, two or three holes down. Visualize the shot that you have at hand, and then obviously take some lessons. Seek out your local teacher professional and interview them. Go and talk to them. Sit down with them. Spend a few moments with them. Get to learn them. See how your personality is. Do you click? Do you kind of rub each other the wrong way? And if that's the case, then you go somewhere else. And those are some good points. That's certainly not all of them, but that's a good starting block to playing better golf. Having said that, Cindy, we got to move on. Peggy Gustafson is ready to join us, so let me just read a few things about her, and then we're going to bring her on the show here. Peggy Gustafson, of course, is a Class A LPGA teaching and club professional member. She's been playing and teaching this golf for over 34 years, got a lot of experience. In 2010-2011, Golf Digest ranked her as one of the top 50 women teachers in America. In 1998 and 2008, she was the LPGA teaching and club professional Central Section Teacher of the Year. Golf Tech Teacher of the Year in 2008, Golf for Women magazine ranked her as, one of the top 50 teachers, LPGA top 50 best teachers, and 2013, the LPGA Marilyn Smith Service Award. She received that, of course, just some of the honors that she's had. She's an accomplished club fitter for Ping, Mizuno, Callaway, TaylorMade, Adams Golf, and Score Golf. And she has played many, many rounds of golf, has 8 career holes in one. That's a feat in itself. And she is up in the Alaska area, so we're going to talk to her a little bit about golf in Alaska. So, Cindy, let's welcome our very special guest this morning, Peggy Gustafson.
Good morning, my friend.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. The sun's coming up at 5:30.
Is the sun up all the time?
Not in Anchorage. We get the high point of our season, we average like 21 and a half hours.
Wow.
So it gets dusky a little bit.
Mm.
Wow.
Mm. Cindy, go ahead.
So tell us how you got to Alaska. I know you've been going there for a few years. I'm so intrigued. Tell us about it.
Well, I got invited to come up in the summer of 2010 to do a week's worth of clinics with the Anchorage Women's Golf Association. And the lady that brought me up said, you know, you should spend some time while you're up here. Stay a couple extra days. And my thought was everybody lived in like a log cabin and had an outhouse and lived out in the bush. So I said, you know, I've seen a lot of pretty country traveling, so I'll take a day off. And I got up here, and this place will just blow you away. So I came back in September and spent 2.5 weeks here seeing the beautiful land and doing some fishing and doing a lot of hiking. And I went to and sat down with the owners of the Anchorage Golf Course and said, will you please give me a chance? Here's what I can do. So 6 years later, we're going strong. I'm here from May to the 1st of October, and I head back down to Arizona, and it's been a perfect fit. It's one of those deals, if you'd have known about it 30 years ago, I'd have been here.
So wow.
If you haven't came up to see the state or golf in Alaska, I'd encourage everybody to do it.
Fantastic.
That's
Peggy,
awesome.
Peggy, this is Ted. Let me just ask you a quick question because, again, you know, people might be not familiar with the area. I mean, obviously, we've all heard of Alaska, but many people have not visited. And as you've just eloquently pointed out, there's some great scenery there and that. Is there a difference in playing golf in Alaska than maybe some, for example, you know, if you're playing out in the desert and that, the heat can affect ball flight and so forth. And obviously, if you're playing up in the mountains, things like that. Is there a difference? Is there a noticeable difference in playing in Alaska? Does the climate or conditions there change things slightly than maybe somebody that's playing in Florida or Arizona or some of the other areas?
Well, yeah, so our high today will be about 60. In the summer, we'll hit 75, maybe 80, and it'll play 10 degrees warmer than where it reads. We've just start off this month. We've already had 2 inches of rain, so the course is playing soft. I'd say that the big difference is early season and late season, we come in on temporary greens, and then when we put the course to bed for the winter, we tarp them. So your last 3 weeks and your first 5 to 6 weeks until the greens get established, you're not on real greens. In June, as the grass grows in, it's a combination of bent grass with poe in it that when they first come in, they're a little long. So people coming from the lower 48 come up, and our stimp readings run in about 6 or 7. You just feel like you can't get the ball to the hole. This time of year through September, the greens are really in, so we get them rolling. They're probably averaging about 9 to 10, and if they roll the greens and double cut them, then we can get them up to really good speed. What makes the course unique, Anchorage Golf Course unique, we're near the Chugach Mountain Range. And so our course, topographically, if you flew over it, it slopes from the mountains down to the inlet, and then from where we are, we sit up above downtown. So you've got to be cognizant of where the mountains are, because everything's going to be faster towards the inlet, because it's where water would run off to, and everything's going to be faster to downtown. So it's like having two different slopes you have to manage, and it affects the roll of the ball. We've got a lot of undulations on the golf course. It was built through a forest, so it's beautiful. The course plays different every day, just because the uniqueness to the role of the land.
Now, something too I noticed here in some of the notes that you sent over to Cindy, Peggy, and you alluded to in the beginning about in this particular time of year, you know, the days are very, very long. Your season is a little bit shorter, but your tee times are from 5 o'clock to 9 p.m. or actually almost 10 p.m. So you get a lot of golf. You get a lot of rounds of golf in a year, don't you?
Yeah, we get 30. We're going to average 32,000 this year. It's all depending on the weather. Like, we opened up earlier than normal. We opened up mid-April this year. Well, sometimes there's still snow on the ground. And then we normally close end of October into the 1st of November, again, just depending on the weather. When I got to the course this morning, it was kind of cold because the guy's on 18 and it's still dusky. He's got a headlight on, or like a running lamp on the top of his head. He's out there cutting the holes. We do a lot of our maintenance and our mowing between 2 and 5 in the morning before plays out. So, like this week, I had to move. My start game boot camps normally run from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock, and it's starting to get dark earlier, so we'll move them to 7 to 10.
A.M. or P.M.?
P.M.
P.M. So that's
wow.
What I like about being a golf professional up here is I get to do a lot of on-course play opportunities that I don't have that ability to do when I'm in Arizona. So Monday nights I'll take a group of 3 or 4 out, and we'll do a on-course playing lesson from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock. And there's, you know, still plenty of daylight. The short game boot camps cover 2 nights. So you get 6 hours of instruction, but 4 of it's on technique. And then each night, that last hour, we go out on the course and you're able to play practice on the big green complexes. So it makes it more real, and people tend to grasp it and learn things faster.
Absolutely, absolutely. How many members do you have?
Well, there's no clubs in Alaska. This my golf course is open to the public. It's the number one course in Alaska, and it's weird. We're a huge state, but I don't know. There's like 25 golf courses statewide. So Anchorage has 350,000 people, and we have 5 courses. We had 6, but the military shut one down, which was too bad because it was really a nice layout, very walkable near downtown.
That's awesome.
Budget cap.
What do you like best about it?
You know, I like the people. I grew up in South Texas, and I think South Texas people are very open and very friendly and bringing you in, and I sent that up here. I like that people get life. I mean, in summer, they know winter's coming. They don't waste. Like, if you hunt or fish, you may do it for the sport of it, but if you kill something, it's not to throw a pretty head up on your wall. I mean, you're going to process the meat. You're going to eat it. They raise a lot of their vegetables. They can things. They just, they're into recycling. I mean, it just seems like it's a more holistic environment. So it's just a special place.
It sounds, Peggy, like obviously, again, because you have limited seasons and things much more differently than you do in other areas of the United States and abroad, that you're right, they have to make better use of their time. So they've adapted a more progressive view of things, and it sounds that way in everything. Obviously, because you do have a long day and have opportunities to play, as you do with your boot camps, you've got, you know, later in the evening on a couple of evenings nap. How do you if you were to sort of map out your day as far as from teaching, how do you sort of do that? Because I assume you're not there for the whole 20 hours or so in a day, or do you try to get as much time in as you? How do you map yourself out day to day?
You know, it's not uncommon from the middle of June to the end of July for me to have a 9 to 15 hour day. So my joke is I teach 15 months a year, because what I'll come up and do in 4 or 5 months would be equivalent to a good 6 months down below.
Wow.
So it just, it depends. I mean, I brought in some 3D swing technology this year by an outfit out of Scottsdale called My Swing. So it's basically 18 sensors you put on your body that make you become a little avatar. So when I do those lessons, they're 90 minutes in length. So there's a lot of days that I do two or three of those. 4 out of 7 of my days, I have some sort of a clinic or boot camp going on throughout the day, and then I have the individual lesson. So, you know, if the sun's shining and people are calling, you're there. So you've just really got to be on point. You've got to pace yourself. But there's days that you come home and you just literally just fall into bed. But it's great. I mean, for those of us that, like you guys, that love to teach,
mm-hmm.
it's mm-hmm. not about an 8-hour day.
Right.
And then again, yesterday I only talked two, then the rain hit. So then you go home and you work on marketing projects or video projects, and there's always something to do.
Right.
Do you have many juniors up there?
Do we have juniors?
Yeah.
Yeah. And at my course, we have a really big junior program. There's three of us that teach. So Blake Smith and Sam Bomar both run big junior programs. Blake does a PGA junior program, and he's involved with the First Tee. I do a little bit with juniors, but working with the little kids is an art that I don't really have. They're better at it. So I work with some of the better junior players in the state. Like yesterday, throughout the morning, we probably had 50 kids on property in some sort of a clinic. So we've got a very active junior program.
Wow,
that's
awesome.
Fantastic. Let me ask you, Peggy, in our earlier segment sitting there, we're talking about some things in what we call a good guide to playing better golf, and I don't know if you were able to pick up any of that or not, but one of the things I touched upon, and I wanted to ask you because I know that you're experienced in club fitting. Tell us a little bit about, and for the listeners, the importance of club fitting, about being properly fit and buying the equipment that best suits your game. Because a lot of people out there just sort of willy-nilly go out and, you know, buy a set of golf clubs and don't really put any effort into making sure they're buying the best equipment that's going to suit their game. And because you handle that aspect as well as the teaching, maybe you could touch a little bit on that.
Yeah, club fitting is huge. I mean, I tell everybody, one shoe doesn't fit everybody. I mean, we're all built differently. We have our own unique characteristics. For women, when I talk to a group of women, I'll have everybody stand up, look around the room, and just say, okay, who's the average woman in here? I mean, if we all went and bought the same dress, a few of us it may fit, but others, some of us can't get
right.
it on, and others it's going to look like a big sack. So even for a new golfer, it's important that you are fit with the right length,
mm-hmm.
the right swing weight. I mean, as a new golfer, your lie angle may change. So we have four or five fitting carts on site and an Ernest Sports launch monitor. That it's huge. I mean, most people tend to play a shaft that's too stiff for them. So you've got to work harder to swing the club. I mean, we want to find something that matches you in your movement. And, you know, there's clubs available out there that you don't have to pay an arm and a leg for.
Right.
I hate the it displeases me if I have a student that just went online and bought something without consulting you, because most of the time they get something that, yeah, maybe they bought a great brand name, but again, if I wear a size 9.5 shoe and I got this great sell on a pair of shoes at 7.5, it's not going to work.
Right.
So with women, you know, a lot of these drivers nowadays are so long. When Hogan and Nicklaus and all the greats played, when I grew up playing, we had a 43-inch driver was a men's standard length. That's a men's
right.
three-wood now, and it's longer than the average ladies' driver. So I've sold a lot of drivers this year that we custom-ordered for women that were back to being 42, 42-and-a-half inches. Now they can hit it solid. You get it with the right length, and they, you know, they're hitting the ball further, and they're having more fun. So, you know, everything from your putt in your bag to your driver to even the ball you play is important. In the glove, making sure that if you wear gloves, the glove fits.
Yep.
It's huge.
Yeah, there's a lot of components, and you're right. I think a lot of and I'm gonna bail out here and say that particularly the men are some of the biggest culprits. I think the ladies are a little bit more, and again, I think because many of them are newer to golf, so they're a little bit more receptive to hearing. But a lot of the men I know go out there and they'll get online or they'll go into a store and they're focusing on the driver. They want to buy the, you know, the latest, greatest driver, whether Callaway, Titleist, or TaylorMade or what have you. Without really being properly fit and finding out if that's the best club for them. And then the rest of the clubs, it's just like, well, I'll get this set over here or I'll just get that. They don't spend any time really going through the whole bag and making sure that the clubs that they've got in there are best suited for their game. And you're exactly right. It's hugely important. And it can make a big difference if they're playing, as you said, too stiff of a shaft for the level of player that they are. It can make a world difference just playing the right shaft. And that's where, you know, you're – sorry, go ahead.
Well, when I do a fit, I make sure they don't know what shaft's in there. You know, we're just going through and finding, because there's times that the ego gets in the way. You hand them a club and they're just pounding it. Well, I don't hit them in zone. I don't hit a regular. Well, actually, you do. But yeah, it's your call. I mean, and you know, and that's why working with a launch monitor is good, or something that gives you the feedback so that you can just go and say, look at this. Your pattern's better. You're hitting it 12 yards further. I mean, you make the decision.
Yeah. Well, and ladies, it goes back to, you know, do you want to have fun hitting the driver? Is that the purpose that you're out there playing? If that's the case, then don't bother buying a set. Don't, you know, just go out to the driving range and, you know, hit ball after ball if that's what you want to do, if that's your idea of fun. But if you want to get out and enjoy the game in its entirety, then you've got to be realistic in your abilities, number one, but also make sure that you're fitted properly so that you can get enjoyment through the entire round of golf. And, you know, we've all seen this where, you know, people go out to the practice tee and they pull out the driver and they work on that, and then they might go to the putting green and spend maybe a minute and a half before they're running out to the round, and then they're wondering why they, you know, couldn't break 100.
Yeah,
right?
And they and I think you find a lot of people, they don't want to work on the short game. You know, they just want to work on the long game because they think the short game's easy, which the short game is its own game within itself. So, you know, my joke, both here in Anchorage and also in Phoenix, I do a lot of short game work because I'm going to trick you into working on your big swing. A lot of times working on your short game, especially with pitch shots, with the little half-speed shots, three-quarter swing speed shots, so you really learn impact. So your short game gets better, and all of a sudden, like, well, my long game's better too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and Cindy pointed out earlier in the program, you know, it's better to take maybe a half or even a three-quarter swing and get the ball, you know, even if it only goes 150 yards, you know, in a good place in the fairway than trying to just muscle it and ending up in the woods or the water or somewhere else and then limiting your opportunities. And it's really about creating opportunities. You know, if you look at the best players in the world, it wasn't, you know, it's not so much about how far they can hit, even though we hear about the stats all the time. It was about creating opportunities to give them that best opportunity to score better. And that's really what you want if you want to enjoy the game. And, you know, if you're going to go and take lessons, then you need to pay attention to the person giving you the lessons. And, you know, if they're doing their job properly, they're not focusing on necessarily how far you can hit the ball. It's how many opportunities they're able to help you create through developing sound fundamentals and a good strategy for playing and navigating around the golf course. Peggy, we've got to wrap things up. I want to give you an opportunity to let the folks know that are tuning in that if they want to reach out to you, first off, how can they learn more about the Anchorage Golf Course? Where can they go as their website? And how can they get in touch with you?
So it's anchoragegolfcourse.com. And my website is peggygolf.com. So you can find me at either place. I get to spend 5 months here, and then 1st of October I'll head back down to Phoenix. So I get the best of all worlds. And I enjoyed being on. It was nice to chat with you and Cindy. And Cindy, we'll be seeing each other, I'm sure, soon down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We're so grateful to have you on. We really appreciate it, Peggy.
Yeah, and for those of you that maybe you're planning a little different trip in the future, you might want to consider going up. Especially if you're a golfer, you might want to consider going up and visiting Peggy at the Anchorage Golf Course. Peggy, thank you very much again for spending time with Cindy and I this morning, and we look forward to many, many more great years of teaching and coaching at your facility. And we would love to have you come back on again in the future.
Cool. I look forward to it.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a great day.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was our very special guest, Peggy Gustafson, from the Anchorage Golf Course up in Alaska. I got to admit, I learned something new. Obviously I knew that they probably had some golf courses, but I didn't realize to the caliber and the level that they did. So I learned something new. And again, for those of you tuning in, check it out. Go to anchoragegolfcourse.com. And also peggygolf.com if you want to learn more about Peggy Gustafson. We want to thank, on behalf of Cindy Miller and I, we want to thank everybody for tuning in this morning. And we look forward to helping you develop a better quality of golf life, if you will. And we're here. That's what we're here to do for. So we'll hope you join us next Tuesday here on the Women of Golf Show. Cindy, thank you. Have a great week. And I will talk to you soon.
Thank you. You too, Ted. Have a great day.
All right, bye-bye. Yep, bye-bye.